Okay, we're going to continue where we left off. The last class, the laws of Pesach. We're going through the details of searching for chametz and relinquishing ownership of chametz. We're holding middle of chapter 111, Simon Kuf Yud Aleph and Kisser Shulchan Aruch, Seif Yud, subsection 10. Acher Habdika Miyadi Vatlenu. So after you've done the search for chametz the night before Pesach, the night before the Seders, you have to do what's called bitul. Bitul chametz, the nullification or the relinquishing of ownership of chametz. Ve'ikar ha-bitul hu balev. The essential act of bitul, of relinquishing ownership, it takes place, it's in your heart, it's in the sincerity of your declaration. She'igmer b'libay, she'kol chametz she'birashus ha'heru ki'ilu ein. It means that you decide in your mind that anything that you own of chametz is absolutely meaningless to you, as if it does not exist. It has no importance to you, has no value to you. That's the act of bittul, takes it from being something that you care about and has meaning and has value to you. Bittul says, actually, it has no value to me whatsoever. Chacham said that in addition to having that internal decision, you should also verbalize it. And then you should say what it says in the Siddur, the text of Kol Chamira, all leaven products and so on. And because this is very much an expression of something that you've decided, it's not just a prayer that you rattle off in Hebrew. So if you don't understand the text, Kol Chamira in Aramaic, then you have to say in a language you understand, which is, by the way, why it was formulated in Aramaic in the first place, like a number of other things in the Siddur. Formulated in Aramaic because that was the common language, and the rabbis wanted everybody to understand. So it's not as if you're somehow doing a less than version if you do it in English. English today is the Aramaic of 2,000 years ago. So we keep a lot of things in Aramaic just because we were cool like that. But technically, once you're not talking Hebrew, Aramaic and English pretty much have the same holy value. And if there's anything in Aramaic, you could be absolutely comfortable saying it in English, because the point is you need to understand. Let me just finish this paragraph. Okay, and then he just goes and gives you here the text that says in the Siddur, and everybody can find that in their own Siddur. Yeah, question.
Yeah, so is there any benefit to saying it in Aramaic and then in English afterwards to like keep the minhag alive of saying it in Aramaic, or it's just there's no whatever?
From the language here and from whatever I know about this, if a person actually does not, like, a lot of people might have a sort of a basic understanding of Aramaic. If Aramaic is the equivalent of Chinese to you, I don't think there's any point in saying in Aramaic, because it's not a prayer in Hebrew. Like, for example, the Shema is a different story. The Amidah is a different story. Any tefillah that we have that was originally composed in Lashon HaKodesh, there's value to saying in Lashon HaKodesh and then combining some understanding and so on. But these prayers are not, they're not so much prayers as statements, and they have legal weight. They need to be understood. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if you have some kind of understanding of Aramaic, sure, say it in Aramaic. You could look at the translation beforehand, match up the words, you know what you're saying. Good. Of course, that's ideal. But if a person has no idea what he's saying in Aramaic, not at all, by all means, say it in English. 11, Yud Aleph. Afal pi she'bitul es'chametz b'layla l'achar habdika. Now, although you've done that bitul, you made that declaration at night after the search, b'kalmakim gam b'yim l'achar she'sar v'yisi yachzir v'vatanu v'yichlo kol ha'chametz v'yimer kol chamira. Nevertheless, also during the daytime, when you take the remaining chametz, the pieces that you found, and so on, to be burned in a fire, you do bittul one more time. And the language there is slightly different, but it's basically the same idea. And it doesn't explain here why we're doing it again. And I don't remember why we're doing it again. But that's what we're going to do. Yud Beis, number 12. Chedei she'tzorach b'dikat chametz v'reitzel la'aseh oitzer perush, v'reitzel la'atzer b'seich ha'perus ha'etzim v'shar dvarim. Ramach b'seich l'yuch l'vodka k'sh'yegei l'al-arba'asar. So you have a room where it would require a search for chametz. Why? Because there's a good chance that you brought chametz there during the year. we established before that any place that has a chance that you brought chametz in needs to be checked for chametz. But you want to make that room the storage house, and you're going to keep fruits or your firewood there. And now that you've made it the storage room, you won't be able to check it properly. It's full of stuff. So let's say you're talking about doing something in the middle of the winter, right? It's the week after Hanukkah. You say, you know what? That spare bedroom would be good for. That spare bedroom would be good for storing all our boxes of picture frames and kids' clothing that we never want to give away. All right. Before you do that, there's a pretty crazy halacha. You could check the room for chametz at night by the light of a candle in the middle of January. As you're designating it and switching it into a storage room, you're going to fill it up with stuff. And now, going forward, it's considered to have been checked for Pesach, and right, because you won't be able to check it later. You're not going to, obviously, from this point on, you're not going to bring food in there anymore. It's just a storage room. It's not a hangout room. And that's what you would do. Even if there's much time remaining until Pesach, months to go. Even this could even be happening right after the last Pesach, a week after Pesach. You could decide, I want to change this room into a storage room, fill it up with stuff. I won't be able to get into every nook and cranny and check for next year. Clean it out, check for chametz, get the chametz out, now make it a storage room, you're good to go. So if you really want to give your mom a real, real heart attack, like the day after Pesach, take out a chametz searching set, go around your bedroom, and what are you doing for next year? Sorry, mom. Now, what happens if you didn't know about this? You made a room into a storage room. Now it's full of stuff from the floor to the ceiling. You can't get around everything. It's impossible. So if your intention is that when it comes, like again, we're talking about January. So if your intention is when it comes time for Pesach, I'm going to unload everything. I'm going to move everything out. I'm going to have to check this room. Then you don't have to do anything now. The Alter Rebbe actually quibbles with that and says that you have to clear it out unless there's a tremendous loss, hefsed meruba, associated with clearing it out. Whether, for example, if by moving things you would you know cause damage. I don't know. Maybe it's a storage room full of very delicate, sensitive radio equipment. I don't know. And you can't shake it around too much. Whatever the case may be. But if you're not going to clear out that room or use it until Pesach rolls around, here's an example. I have friends who get their matzah deliveries way in advance of Pesach because they live in remote places, rabbis in remote communities. They have to take their matzah order. They have to make their matzah order early. They have to take delivery early. It's the only way they'll be able to be sure that they have matzah for Pesach. If they start to order now, it's not going to happen. So these guys got matzah deliveries a month or two ago, right? So they're going to have a room, obviously. They're not putting it in their kitchen cabinets now. They're going to have a room somewhere dedicated for the storage of matzah. And that room is going to have to be checked. Well, besides the fact that it's a bad example because you're talking about things that need to be cleaned from chametz anyway. But you're making a storage room well in advance of Pesach. And it's going to get used. It's going to get emptied out. That's why I thought of this. During Pesach, it's going to get emptied out. As you eat the matzah, the piles of boxes are going to fall away. So if that's what's going to happen, then it needs to be checked now. Even though it's going to be a real schlep, it's going to cost you money. Moral of the story is, if you're ever going to do this, you check the room for chametz before you set everything up. Cool. Very interesting. Number 13, Yud Gimel. If you're setting up the storage and the intention is you're not going to touch it until Pesach's over, now the question becomes a question of time. If you're setting up the storage room within 30 days of Pesach, so it means anytime after Purim, basically. So now, you don't have to check it. unless there's obvious chametz there which you're going to get rid of. And you can rely on the fact that you're going to do the bittul and relinquish ownership of whatever chametz is there. Sorry, if it's before 30 days, then you don't have to do that. Hang on a second. So I guess before we were talking about a case. I'm just trying to figure out the flow here. So the idea you have to check the room before you make it a storage room is a rule. Now, if you didn't do that, I think that's what the flow is. It's only talking, we're still in that scenario under the umbrella of if you did not do bedikat chametz before you turned it into a storage room. So now we had the options we said before that that if you're going to clear it out before the time of Pesach arrives, then you can just do it then. If you're going to clear it out during Pesach, you have to unfortunately undo everything and do bedikat chametz now. And now we're saying the third clause, if you're only going to clear out the storage room after Pesach is over, now the question becomes, when are we setting up this storage room? If it's before 30 days before Pesach, no, anytime before Purim, probably including Purim itself, then you don't have to check it at all and you can rely on the bittul. If it's within the 30 days of Pesach, then I'm sorry to tell you that since you're in the 30-day zone of learning and discussing and asking questions about the laws of Pesach, then by the same token, you also have to check the room for chametz. And even in a case where you forgot, you did not check it, and now I guess immediately when you remember it, the next night that you remember, you're going to have to check it. A little bit confusing. Bottom line is, I guess the only scenario where you don't have to unload the room and start checking for chametz after you've already established it as a storage room and you didn't check it beforehand, the only time you don't have to do that is if you made this whole storage room, if you set that up more than 30 days before Pesach, and you're not going to be using any of the stuff clearing out the room until Pesach's over. That would be the only time. Any other time, it seems, you're going to have to either check it before, and if you didn't, you're going to have to undo everything and check it again. Okay. Easy way to avoid this. Check it before you set it up. Okay, Yud Dalet 14. V'im Oysa Oitzer B'boyer. If you're turning a pit into a storage space, you're going to put wheat that has not become leavened yet. So dry, raw stalks of wheat. And then what happened was, surprise, surprise, because of the moisture in the on the bottom or on the walls of the pit, your wheat became moistened and now became leavened. Interesting rule that even though you may have done this within 30 days of Pesach, you're not going to have to undo everything and check for chametz. It's enough that you're going to relinquish ownership through bittul, because when you establish this, when you put them in, you weren't storing chametz. The cases before, you're talking about cases where there was a chance that there was chametz in the room, and actual chametz needs to be searched for. Here, the pit is just a pit. It's just dirt. And the wheat that you put in there was just raw wheat. So there was never a situation of actual chametz. And in this case, we'll be lenient and tell you it's enough that you do bittul. And if you have some of the wheat was leavened and wet and some was not, that is a matter of great debate. You're going to have to ask your local rabbi. You should not throw kernels of grain to feed your chickens and throw them in anywhere that's moist within 30 days of Pesach, because if you throw, let's say, wheat kernels on a puddle of water near your chicken coop, and it's 2 weeks before Pesach, and you forget about it, you don't clean it up, guess what? You have chametz on your property. So don't do that. This is why you feed your chickens rice before Pesach. No, I'm kidding. Corn.
Well, chickens are starving.
Huh? Chickens, clearly. How much noise they make. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for that one. I'm sorry. Mechila. Tes Zayin, number 16. Someone travels on the road, he has no intention of coming back until Pesach's over. Before he goes away, should appoint somebody who will check the house for him and relinquish ownership of his chametz. There's some opinions according to Alter Rebbe who says it's best not to do bittul through a shliach. Tell the person explicitly, I'm making you and my agent, my shliach, to do the bedikas chametz, to check the chametz for me. And when the shliach does the search for chametz, instead of saying kol chamira, which we normally say all the chametz that's in my possession, you have to just say it in language that would be appropriate, all the chametz that is in my friend's possession. And you also, wherever you travel, on Erev Pesach, you should recite and perform the ritual of Bittul. The common practice that I'm familiar with is that you can do Bedikas Chametz even if it's not the night before Pesach. You can do it a few nights before. So you're traveling. People don't always travel within 24 hours of Pesach. So you can do the checking beforehand. And if you're selling the entire apartment, the entire house, still should be doing the bedika. I think you also have to do bedika chametz where you're going to be. So let's say you're in a hotel. So by paying for the hotel room, you know, you're renting that space. That's your rent while you're there. So you do bedikas chametz in your hotel room. If you're going to family, like let's say once you've officially moved out of your parents' home, you got married, let's say, and you're going to stay with family, so you should give some kind of symbolic rent to whoever's house it is, saying, here's a buck, here's $5, whatever. I'm renting my room.
A gift or something?
No, rent.
It can't be, it has to be money specific?
Rent. Yeah, okay. Rent money. You it doesn't have to be, you know, market value, but it's symbolically that you're going to rent the space, and thereby you now have the right to check chametz. Like, you're isolating your bedroom from the rest of the house. Like, you don't have to check my bedroom. You check the rest of your house. It's your house. Check the house. I'm checking my bedroom. This is my territory.
Yeah. So you can't pay rent with bottles of wine?
I mean... Depends on the landlord, but no.
Yeah.
Minhag is that you just give him a symbolic sum, and yeah. You had a question?
Yeah. So it seems to suggest that you have to do the search even if you would just sell your entire property, apartment, mm-hmm. house, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in a situation like for us students,
mm-hmm.
where I'm at least going home for all of Pesach, the plan was to just sell the apartment, come back to it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Does the search need to be done even the 3-4 whatever days before Pesach starts that I'd be going?
So it seems that yes. Although it says here you can appoint an agent to do the search for you. I'm pretty sure that you can do it yourself as well a few days before, even though you're selling it as well. I mean, And the same thing is true in your house where you live. You do the bedikat chametz and you sell.
Yeah, I guess.
Right? So it's true. You're always doing both. It's not a contradiction. One doesn't cancel out the need for the other.
So do you still say the kol chamira when, like, before you do it, and then you say it on the that same.
You say, do you say day, if you're doing the Bdikat Chametz a few days before Pesach?
A few days in advance.
That's a good question.
You are selling some chametz with the idea in mind.
That's a good question. I don't know if you would say Kol Chamira then. I mean, he says here you would say it wherever you are on Erev Pesach.
Yeah.
So he said that's for sure. The question is, should you say Kol Chamira? Why not? If you're leaving. I don't know. I will have to look that up.
It can't hurt, can it?
I don't know if it can hurt. It might. Like, by the same token we said before, you can't. Why? Like what we looked up before, right? But you, why you would not only do bittul? Mm-hmm. You would do bittul and selling. No, I mean, I guess if you're leaving, there's no chance that you would want to. No, you're leaving.
You're not going to be back.
Right. No, if you're leaving now and you're not going to be back, then it's basically the same, practically, as doing bittul the night of the chametz. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Probably don't make a bracha. Maybe you wouldn't make a bracha if you're not doing it the night before.
I think you make a bracha. I have to check. Honestly, I have to check. It doesn't really speak about this in detail here. It would probably be only in the main Shulchan Aruch. Okay, let's do one more and finish the chapter. Yud Zayin Matzah Chametz Bebeis Bechol HaMoed. If this is everybody's worst fear, you find chametz in your house during the holiday, specifically on Chol HaMoed. Yetzienu v'yisrafenu. Take it out of your house and burn it right then and there. Yimyesh Beit Kazayis. If its volume is the volume of a kazayit, which is how much?
27 grams.
Weight?
Yes.
It's a volume measurement.
Volume measurement, yeah.
What's the volume of 27 grams?
27 centimeters squared.
Exactly. Yeah, 27 cc. 27 cc, or just about one fluid ounce, one small shot glass.
Of that chametz was water, then it'd be one to one.
Right. But the volume is, this makes me crazy every year, by the way. Every year, there's debates about this because the stupid ounces and grams, you know. Somebody once made the mistake that fluid ounces and weight ounces are interchangeable, and we've been paying the price ever since.
Thank you, America.
There are so many proofs within halacha, so many proofs, just from the text in Shulchan Aruch. It's so obvious that it's a volume measurement.
Yeah.
And there are people who will swear on their mother's deathbed that it's weight.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it is 27 milliliters.
No, because the truth is you can do the conversion between weight and mass and weight and volume, and people have done that. So now we know how much weight of matzah equals the volume of matzah you need.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, again, it's a conversion. Yeah. Not the actual shear is a volume measurement.
It is
so, small example. I have to get this off my chest. It's just a rant. It drives me crazy every year. Small example. In the halachas of eating matzah, when it talks about how much matzah you need to eat, so one of the things it says over there is you have to make sure to eat enough that you're not counting on the air bubbles that are present in basically every matzah. There's air bubbles, right? If you eat a very small amount of matzah and you're looking at those air bubbles, you're counting air, and it's not okay. Mm-hmm. So he says in Shulchan Aruch, eat a little bit more than the bare minimum of the shear, because if you eat right at the edge, you're probably counting air bubbles, right? Now, clearly, you could never even think of counting air bubbles if it was a weight issue. Air has no weight.
Yeah.
The only possibility you have of maybe counting air bubbles is if it's volume. So, oh, that's a nice big bubble. Oh, look, that counts. No, it doesn't.
What? Air does have weight. Air has mass. It's trapped in the matzah. It has, they would show up on a sensitive enough scale.
Yeah, on a sensitive enough scale. Not when you're eyeballing. I understand what you're saying, but I think when halacha is speaking about somebody looking at a piece of matzah at the Seder and saying, there's enough here, don't count the air bubbles, it's an indication of the fact that it's a volume measurement. Anyway, and there's more. There's a few other, indications for somebody who needs to see it in halacha. Anyway, if you see somebody measuring matzah by weight, smack them for me, please. and tell them that it's a volume measurement. If they really want to know, what they should do is before Pesach. I've done this. How crazy I am! I've done this to prove the point. Before Pesach, take out some matzah, get yourself a coffee grinder, grind it up into real, like the food processor doesn't do it. Food processor gives you chunks. Grind it into powder, which super fine matzah meal. Mm-hmm. And a coffee grinder, you'll get super fine. And you basically make a powder, which you can pack down, tamp it down, and see how much volume it actually takes, how much matzah you need to grind in order to get to one fluid ounce or 28 cc's.
That's what it is, 28 milliliters?
It's basically, I think it's 28, yeah. Mm-hmm. One fluid ounce to round it out.
30
fluid
just
ounces,
to make sure.
30 just to make sure. And even then, right? Yeah. And it's crazy, actually, because different matzah bakeries will have, you know, different densities of matzah and the amounts of the... Oh, it's always a half a matzah. Like, it's not, maybe the square matzah maybe is probably always half, but the round matzah varies tremendously. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks for listening to my rant. I'll try not to get off on too many of those. Okay, so if you find chametz in your house and it's the... if you find chametz in your house during Chol HaMoed, take it out and burn it. And if it has at least the minimum amount of a kezayit, which is 28 cc's, one fluid ounce of volume measurement, you have to make the bracha al biur chametz. Aval hapachas kezayit lo yivarech. And if it's less than that, you don't make a bracha, just burn it. If you found the chametz on Yom Tov or on Shabbos during Pesach, which is Chol HaMoed, or if it was Erev Pesach, then now that comes out on Shabbos. Also the Tautle, because now it's Muktzah, because you're not allowed to have any benefit from it, and something that you can't have any, you can't eat it, you can't derive any benefit from, so it's basically Muktzah. You can't do anything with it on Shabbos. So even though it's not Pesach yet, but because it's already banned from being something that you can have enough from any benefit from Chatzot and on, then it's basically Muktzah. You can't touch it. You must cover it with some kind of container until after Chag or after Shabbos, and then you burn it. Obviously, if it's you can start a fire. If you found the chametz on the last days of Chag, and then if you were going to cover it and wait until after Pesach's over, it's just Pesach's already over. What you would do then is obviously the same thing. You would keep it covered with a container, burn it after Yom Tov's over, even though at this point Pesach is done. But you wouldn't make a bracha over it, even if it has the size of a kezayit. That is the end of chapter 111. Join us next week for more the halachas of getting ready for Pesach.